Okay, so we're moving now to the next Mishnah, Mishach Zo Bulmus, which we're going to talk about. Seems to be some sort of disease where someone needs to eat immediately, or else they'll be sick in some way. And we're going to what comes up in the context of that is the issue of Hakal, eating the most lenient prohibition in this situation. Let's say not a Yom Kippur necessarily, or maybe also Yom Kippur, but where you have different non-kosher things to eat, some are more severe than others. And we're going to get into some detail as to how Hakal Hakal works and how it relates to questions of violating Shabbos. So we'll start by reading the Gemara. I don't know, if I ask for volunteers, I probably won't get anyone other than repeat people. But if there is a non-repeat person who wants to volunteer, you can do that. Or I can just cold call someone. All right. So, Eliana K.
You want me to start by...
with the Mishnah.
Mishnah, yeah. Okay, just checking. Okay. I'm using it online, so... okay. So Misha Achzu Bulmus Ma'achilino Toa Filu Dvarim Tmeim Achi Oruinav. So someone who's a Bulmus, which we sort of get what that means, you should give them even things that are Tame until his eyes, are okay again, light up, whatever.
Right, and by Tame, what do we mean by Tame here?
Non kosher.
Right.
Misha Nashu Kelev Shota. Someone who's bit by a dog. We don't feed him from the part of the dog's liver, is what we thought they meant.
And what's why would you? Or first of all, what would we call this, getting bitten by a dog? What are we worried about, presumably? Medically?
Like rabies. But
probably something like rabies, right? And there was some treatment involving the liver. So why do we say you shouldn't? So why don't you read the other opinion and then we'll talk about what the machlokas is?
Sure. So I just lost the place. Sorry. Okay. So mechatzer kaved shelo Rav Matya ben Chirish Matir. So and this guy Rav Matya ben Chirish says that that you can give it to him.
Right. What does Rashi say? Yeah.
Rashi says basically that. Basically, one of them believes, so there were doctors who used to do this, but the first opinion believes that this is not refua gemura, like it's not enough of a, maybe, we were saying like maybe he thinks it's pseudoscience, but basically he thinks that it doesn't work, and it's not going to actually be, it's not going to heal him fully enough to allow it. And Rav Matya, kisavar refua gemura, he thinks it is refua gemura, so he says it's mutter.
Right, so it's an important principle, right? Something that's basically established science, you can do, even if it involves Isurim. Something that's not really established, some people do it, but it's, not clear how seriously to take it. Something like that, even, you can do it if there's no prohibition, but here it's Usur. Just to remind everyone, what's the prohibition? Is that, right, dogs are not kosher, yeah. Right? Usually think like liver's kosher, right? You just need to kosher it the right way, but that's only from kosher animals, obviously, right? Fine. So that's the machlokas here, an important principle to get out of our Mishnah. Okay, why don't you keep reading?
Right. So the Ud Amar Rav Matya ben Chirish, Hachoshish Begrono, Matilin Lo Sam, Betoch Piv, Beshabbat, Mipneshu Safik Nevashot, Bekol Safik Nevashot, Docha Ed HaShabbat. So someone who, there's something wrong with his throat, basically, and we can give him, I think, some sort of medicine. We can give it to him in his mouth on Shabbos because there's suffix about whether he'll die, and cold suffix nefashot, dochet ha-Shabbat, it overrides Shabbos.
What's the issue with giving medicine?
Sort of refua, maybe?
Right, there's issue refua. It's only derabanan. Right, it's a gzera of shchika samimanim, and we're worried that we made a gzera. Since you might crush up medicine, we don't allow you to take any medicine, even if it's already crushed. It's only derabanan, so it's sort of funny, right? Usually you think like, safek nefasho, so you can save someone's life, that you would say we can do any avera or any violation of Shabbos. Here we're sort of focusing on this very minor gzera derabanan. are relatively minor. Yeah, okay, keep going.
Okay. Mishnafla alav mapulet safek hu sham safek hu eno sham safek chai safek meit safek kuti safek Yisrael mefakchin alav et hagal mitzavahu et hagal. Okay, so if something falls on a person, and there's suffix whether the person is even, like, you can't tell if the person is even under it, I think, and you don't know if he's alive or dead or whether he's Jewish or non-Jewish. I'm assuming he's talking about on Shabbos, so we say either way, we've removed the pile of whatever it is. Mitza'u chai mefakchin ve'im mit yanichu. So saying if we see that the person's alive, then we uncover them and we take them and whatever. And if the person is dead, then we leave them. And I think we assumed that had to be talking about on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talking about Shabbos. What's the prohibition here in terms of, what's the halachic issue of Shabbos?
I wasn't sure if it was like muksa of moving these things, or if it was also like, I mean, I know with a dead person in like, if someone passes away on Shabbos, you wait to bury them anyway, but I don't know what the actual,
right, so the body would be muksa, but obviously if the person's alive, then that wouldn't apply, right? So there's it. But there also may be issue with moving the building, either of just muksa, right, it's not usable, the building's not usable, or maybe also some sort of boner soser, your building or unbuilding, demolishing in the process, which might be deraisa. You'd have to come up with an exact scenario where that would apply. It may be tricky to find the deraisa there, but again, this mission has derabanans too.
I was just gonna say maybe even carrying, but I don't know.
Right, it could also be carrying depending on exactly the scenario. Is it a, you know, is there a wall around it? Is it private? Yeah, so it could be also, yeah, that would be a good possibility too. So this, it's what's interesting, this in this Mishnah is the language of where's the line? Right. We have a line about suffik, right? Suffik, right? Kol suffik nefashos doches ashavas. We talk about, right, that we've seen in the Gemara before. We're going to see the proof to this in the next Gemara, probably on Thursday. But then we have this interesting thing. We're talking about this this week and last week we're talking about sugyas of pikuach nefesh. But in our mission we have the word pikuach, but a different pikuach, right? If you notice, mifakhim alav esagal, that's also a pikuach. So there's a whole, you know, there's an interesting usage of the term pikuach here, because lefakech means like to oversee or to be able to see something. So mifakhim esagal is to move a stone off of someone to be able to see them, right? To sort of extricate them. But it literally just means to be able to either oversee or also can mean to take care. So pikuach nefesh, as a term, is also the idea of taking care to save a life. But it's sort of funny that the example of pikuach nefesh is specifically an example of pikuach hagal, of removing the stone, right? So there's definitely some literary wordplay going on here. And there's also a sugya in Shabbos where you have the similar thing. We don't have time to go into it, but if you want to have fun, look at the way the Mishnah uses the word pikuach in the context of pikuach nefesh about all sorts of other things. Okay, that was a sidebar. Fine, but that's our Mishnah. We're going to focus today on the first line, on machin oso, where you give non-kosher food to the person who is taken by the bulmus disease, and the Gemara is going to take that in a particular direction. I think we'll move to a new volunteer. Maybe we'll go. Is it, if it's okay, we'll go to the other Eliana if you want to try the beginning of the Gemara.
Sure, I'm guessing that's me.
Yes.
Okay. starting from Tanur Rabbanan.
The first Tanur Rabbanan, yeah.
Okay, Tanur Rabbanan. It was taught in a Mishnah. So from where do we know that, like, when his eyes become light, like we can tell if it's like good or bad?
Well, who can tell if it's good or bad?
I guess, like, the people that are, like, appraising the situation, like, the people that are watching him, like, if it's good, like, if it's enough and then, like, we should feed him more, or that we shouldn't feed him more, or if it's not enough and we shouldn't.
So here, Yavchin, Misha Yavchin, is third person. It's he, when he can tell between good and bad. So how do we know that his light, his eyes were light, were became light again? Remember, that was the Mishnah said, right? We feed him whatever food, even non-kosher, ad she ya'oru enav, until his eyes brighten. So I thought that meant until his eyes brighten, right? Until somehow his eyes would look different, or his countenance would look different. The Gemara is telling us there's an actual standard that correlates to that. His eyes become brighter, Misha Yavchin ben Tov Lera. Right? Once he can tell the difference between good and bad, and keep reading.
Amar Abaye, Abaye said, Uvitama, like, what's the reason?
So here, look at Rashi. Rashi, Tama can mean reason. Certainly, in this case, it means flavor. So Rashi says, Misha Yodea, Lehavchin ben Ta'am Tavshil Yafe, Letam Tavshil Ra. So at least, according to Rashi, at least, the way Rashi takes this is, how do you tell that this person is better when they can tell the difference between good and bad? Good and bad, meaning good and bad quality food. And how do they tell? Betaima, with flavor. So maybe there's two different things. There's good and bad food in terms of, I don't know, is it spoiled or not, or whatever. And then there's also discerning flavor. I guess you could read it, you could theoretically read it slightly differently, that it's Mishiyavchemin Tov Lera, when a person can tell the difference between good and evil, Uvitama, and can they give a reason? Meaning, can they explain, like, the, you know, the ethical significance of action one way or the other? Rashi doesn't read it that way. Presumably, someone's, like, sick and they're eating. The most likely thing that they'll be distinguishing is different qualities of food. I think that's where Rashi gets it from. But there may actually be something else going on here, too. Another literary vort, if you're up for it, which is, who famously learns to distinguish between good and evil?
What do you mean by that?
By the Eitz Hadas.
Because their eyes were opened.
Yeah, after the Eitz Hadas, right? Yeah. V'nifkechu einichem, right? So if you eat the Eitz, your eyes become opened. You can tell the difference between good and bad. And it comes after eating a fruit, right? Of course, after eating, there's a flavor there. So, you know, it's hard to know what the broader significance is, but I think it's hard to read this line without seeing it as some sort of a nod to Bracious and the eating from the Eitz Hadas. So that was just a thought. And maybe that's why they're using this funny language, right? Which, again, is sort of double meaning, right? You can tell between good and bad. Well, good and bad can be ethically good and ethically bad, or it can be, like, you know, good quality and bad quality. And Tama can be flavor, but it can also mean reasons. So yeah, so that's the piece there. I'm no expert in the science of bulmos and whatnot. I don't think it applies too much nowadays. I think our doctors have different standards, but that's the standard in the time of the Gemara. So let's move now to the next Tanu Rabbanan, Eliana H., if you want to continue reading, which will be more on our sugya.
Okay, Tanu Rabbanan, it was taught in a Braita. Mish afsal bulmus, whoever, like, has, like, whoever's, like, ravenous, who has, like, who's very hungry. Machin otso hakel hakel. So we feed him hakel hakel. So, yes, I guess we'll define what that means here.
Right, but just literally, before we get into the details, hakal, hakal, right? The minor thing. Yeah. We feed them the lower violation, the lower iser, yeah?
Tevel v'nevela, machin otso nevela. So if there's, like, an option between tevel and nevela, if there's like a choice which one, you feed him nevela. Tevel v'shvi, tevel and shvi, you do shvi. Tevel v'truma, if it's tevel and truma, tnaihi, so it's like a discussion which one.
Right, so tonight, it's a machlokes between tanaim, which we're going to read. We'll pause now, Eliana. You'll read the rest of that brisa in a couple of minutes. But let's first discuss some of the prioritization here. Right? Why do we have this preference for nevela over tevel and shvius over tevel, and then we'll see about truma. Or why in each case do we prefer one over the other? Rashi helps us a little bit, but not fully. Right, Rashi tevel shvius machlino so shvius. That's the case number two. What does Rashi tell us?
He says that tevel is mita b'day shemayim, so it's more severe.
Right, tevel is misa v'day shemayim, death by hands of heaven, whereas shvius is just ase, yeah. right? It's just an assay. It's much lower in severity. So you eat the less severe thing. You want to minimize, you want to cut your losses, so to speak. Minimize the violation. And the previous case, Rashi doesn't tell us, Tevel and Nevela, but obviously Tevel is still Misa Bidei Shamayim. Nevela is a lav. You get Malkos for eating a Nevela. Lo Sochal Kol Nevela. But it's not Misa Bidei Shamayim. It's less severe in that way. So that's the basic standard. This is, you know, this is part of a broader principle that maybe the best way of determining the severity of an Avera, at least 99% of the time, is based on the Onesh. The more severe the punishment, the worse the Avera. There are a handful of exceptions to that in a couple of different types of scenarios. Sometimes some things are so severe you can't even punish for them. You'll find that formulation sometimes in Rishonim. Or sometimes, you know, there'll be some overriding factor that's not necessarily reflected in the Onesh. We can get into that. There's large discussions there, but this is an important piece of important principle of how you sort of categorize averas, which is by the Onesh, by the punishment. The more severe the punishment, the more important or the more severe the violation. Okay, and as Eliana read, there's a machlokes as to what one would do in a case of shvius going up against, tevel and truma, a case where tevel goes up against truma, right? Tevel, and just to, what's tevel? Just to get our facts straight here. Right, Adira?
Untithed produce,
right? You didn't take off all the different things. And truma is tithe, right? You took off the truma. It's supposed to go to the kohen. You can't, if you're a non-kohen, you can't eat it. So what, and they both have a punishment on the same level. So let's analyze which one takes precedence. Eliana H.
Okay, so Titania, I was talking to Brightza. That we give him tevel, we don't give him to eat truma. Ben Tima says truma v'lo tevel, so he says the opposite, that we give him truma, not tevel. Amar Rava said, if it's possible to feed him with regular food.
Right, regular food. It's not tevel, it's not truma, just normal food.
D'chule ama lo flige d'mitzkanin and leip. So it says, everyone says that you shouldn't argue about it and you should just give it to him.
Right.
Let's feign on lay and give it to him to eat. Kiplige. So where do they disagree with this? It's lo efshar b'chulin. So they're saying in a case where it's not possible to give him chulin, then what are you supposed to do?
Right. And meaning, so the scenario is, let's say there's no chulin. And so why not just separate your tevel? Split your tevel into chulin and other things. Rashi tells us there's not enough, right? If you split your tevel and it's now whatever 20% truma, maser, all the other things, and 80% chulin, that still won't be enough for them to eat. So no matter what, they're going to have to either end up eating truma or tevel. So that's in that scenario. Then we have this machlokes, and he's going to spell it out. Yeah.
Amar sabar tevel chamor. So one person thinks that tevel is you have to be more strict with that. Mar savar truma chamura. Then one person thinks that truma is more strict.
Mm-hmm. And what? Yeah. Keep going.
Okay. Mar savar tevel chamur. So yeah. So one person holds that eating tevel is more strict. Avat truma chazi kohen. But truma is you're able to give it to kohen.
Right. And that's presumably the reason why. Right. Because truma can be given to a kohen. Truma is not kosher, it just is limited in who can eat it. So it's obviously less severe, according to that opinion. Okay, and what's the other view?
About tevel, but with tevel, efshar l'tkuneha, it could be fixed, where efshar b'chulin, so it can become something that's chulin, so then it would be allowed for people.
Right. I think you pause after efshar l'tkune, right? So aval tevel, efshar l'tkune, meaning truma is... Right, truma is chamur because, and they don't say the because, but it's sort of implied, because tevel you can fix. How do you fix tevel? You just split it up.
Separate it out.
Yeah, you take off the truma maser, all the other things, and then your tevel is fixed. Right here, we're focusing on the truma. So let's say everything else was taken off. You just take off the truma, and then you're good. So it's an interesting perspective, right? The two possible things, each one has a leniency. Each of Truma and Tevel have a leniency. Truma is, you know, is not kosher. It just, it's limited in who can eat it. Tevel, no one can eat Tevel, right? A kohen's not allowed to eat Tevel. But it can be fixed. You can fix Tevel very easily. You just split it up and then it can be eaten and the chulin can be eaten by anyone. So there's a question as to which one is considered more and less severe. Fine, but the you know, we don't do this exercise for everything else. The implication is you can take all Yisurim in the Torah and spend a lot of time figuring out which one is the least severe and feed the person on that basis. In fact, we're not going to spend time on this, but some Rishonim, I believe the Ramban himself goes through a bunch of other scenarios and you end up with some good lumdus. You end up with some like tangential important principles about different Yisurim when you try to figure out their halachic level. Unfortunately, we're not going to have the time to do that here. It's a bit off topic, but it's good to know that it comes up in this discussion. Fine. Right. Okay, so that's sort of the first half of our Gemara, right? Sort of setting up the basic principle. The basic principle of hakal. You always pick the more lenient thing. How do you determine that? Well, the first resort is to figure out the level of the iser. If there's a discrepancy, it's pretty clear which one's more and less severe. And then if that doesn't fix it, if that doesn't resolve which one's more and less severe, then you move to other factors, you know, these more intangible factors of efshelut akune or that's mutter to a kohen. Then you have to figure it out on a more detailed level. Good. The next part of the Gemara is going to talk about how this relates to Shabbos. And we'll see, the Gemara is going to have one sort of discussion about that. Rishon, we're going to have a different discussion, a different thing that comes up in terms of a different Shabbos scenario. So thank you, Eliana's, for each of your reading. We'll move now to a third reader. Dina, do you want to start from the top of Pei Gimel Amid Beis?
Sure. Which?
Right at the top of Pei Gimel Beis, Efsher Bechulin Pshita. Right, it's a question that Gemara is asking based on what I said before. Right, it was sort of funny if you recall. We didn't dwell on this at the time, but we said if you have a choice between Chulin and Tevel, then what? Rabba's explanation, right? Machlokes, which one to take? Rabba says, well, everyone thinks that Chulin is better than both Truma and Tevel. So now we're going to analyze that for a second. So yeah.
Okay. Efshar b'chulin pshita l'tzricha b'shabbos. So we're asking, like, is it possible? Why don't you just do it with chulin if that's possible?
Well, we said that before, right? Rava said everyone agrees if you can do it with chulin, you should. We're asking now pshita. Obviously, chulin's not usher. Sorry.
And so then, no, it's like we need to say this to tell you that on Shabbos, when generally you can't separate Truma and Masro, that you should still do that rather
right.
than eat.
And what's the issue? What's the issue of separating Truma and Masro on Shabbos?
It's like a shvut.
Mm-hmm.
That you're not allowed to do that.
Right. Great. Yeah, okay, yeah. So that's yeah. So that, so it's a shvus, it's a derabanan, right? So the
Rabbi Zuchter?
Yeah.
My chumash and I were a little bit confused about this one. Originally, I thought that the issue of taking Truma Masro on Shabbos was like some kind of metakin, or maybe like some kind of making a kinyan, but then the Gemara refers to it as tiltol. What's going on there?
That's a good question. I didn't look into this in the discussion on this, but I think you're pointing to a good question here. I think there's probably more to discuss, but it sounds like Rashi gets into that. Nettie, do you want to? Yeah.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, like, because Rivka and I were discussing the same question, and we saw that, like, the Gilu and Hashas, like, pointed to, like, a sugya in Yevamos, which talks about separating Truma and Shabbos, and, like, it also uses the phrase there of Tiltal, but then Rashi just, like, says Shvus, so we thought that maybe it was just kind of, like, Tiltal is, like, a type of Derabanan, like, it's sort of just, like, a generic phrase for, like, anything that's, like, Aser Mishum Shvus, but that it's not, like, Dafka
Tiltal,
but I'm not sure if that's
right. Right. So definitely, that sounds like Rashi, the Gilu and Hashas is pointing to Rashi consistently saying that Tiltal means Shvus. That doesn't necessarily solve Dvorah's question, because you still can say, well, why is it not Misakein? And so I think there may be, I think there may be a whole discussion as to whether it's Misakein, and then if it, you know, yeah, so maybe there's a way of bridging that. But yeah, it's a fair question. You know, as I said, I didn't look into it, but I'm sure there's a lot to go into there.
Wait, yeah. if it's Mitakin, that would be like a Malacha D'Oraisa?
No, Misakin Tikkun Mana is also a Derabanan. So either way, it's sort of at the same level. It's some sort of Derabanan. Whether it's, you know, Tiltal, you know, which is Mukta, which sort of is Derabanan, or Misakin, which would be Derabanan. Yeah. So there's a larger sugya there. There's a larger sugya there to look at, which we are unfortunately not going to get to today. Yeah. Okay, so, right. So we said, even though it's Shabbos, to get back to the Gemara, even though it's Shabbos, we say still it's better to separate on Shabbos and violate that Derabanan, whichever Derabanan it is, in order to avoid doing either Tevel or Truma, whichever one of those is worse. Okay. So, yeah, keep going, Dina.
Right. So, on top of this, it's also obvious that you should do it, because it's just Tiltal, and that's Derabanan. And so you should definitely do that rather than eating Tevel.
Right, that's Derabanan versus a Daraisa. This is so obvious. Why do we need to say that? So what's the logic here?
So, we're dealing with a case of like a plant that doesn't have, like, it's in some kind of like container and it doesn't have holes in the bottom. And so it's Derabanan to, I guess, take Tribunal Master from that on Shabbos.
So it is usher to take Truma's Master just like anything else in terms of Shabbos. Shabbos is the same if it's in a potted plant or not potted plant. The separation issue would presumably be the same. But what changes? What changes when you put something in a potted plant with no hole?
I think Rashi said it was the Truma.
Yeah, the Truma / Tevel issue changes. How so?
Because the Tevel is Derabanan. Sorry, the separating true and master on Shabbos is Derabanan, but it's Tevel is also Derabanan, so you should be, you should rather do the Tevel, separate the Tevel, than eat Tevel.
Right, so, but right, exactly. So that's a chiddush, right? It's not obvious. But the point is, right, and I think we're taking this for granted, that things that are in a pot that doesn't have a hole, and utzitz she'eino nakuv, are considered not attached to the ground. Things that are not attached to the ground don't have the full din, don't have the din d'oraisa of tevel, of truma, of anything else, right? It's not attached to the ground. All those dinim depend on things that grow from the ground. This doesn't grow from the ground, it grows from a pot. Therefore, it wouldn't be Derabanan, it would only be Derabanan. So the whole issue of Tevel and Truma is only Derabanan. That goes up against separating on Shabbos. That's a pretty fair question. That's a reasonable question. And then Rabbah tells us that everyone holds that Chulin wins out, meaning it's better to separate on Shabbos, violate the Derabanan, whatever it is of separating on Shabbos, rather than violating the Derabanan of either Truma or Tevel. So that's how we've now read the sugya. Okay. Right, and again, Mar Savar Tevel Chamor, Mar Savar Truma Chamor. We sort of repeat the thing before. If you don't have Chulin, then the question is what's to be preferred. Okay, now the Gemara wants to do some fancy footwork, wants to tie in this Machlokes to another Machlokes between Tanaim about taking off Meiser. Okay, so Dina, keep going.
Okay, so
So one opinion holds that Tevel is more chamur, and the other holds that Truma is more chamur. So Lima Tanaihi, so let's say that it's the Mahoga Tanaim, the Tanya, Vishnesh Konachash, Greenlo Profan, Akum, Greenlo, Tarn Gola, the Gozuzino, it's had Krishino, Mafilino, Tobin, Sariyaf, Sarah, Degree Rebbe. Rabbi Eliezer bar Rabbi Shimon Omer Gulya Fal Achi Aser. So we have a person that says someone who was bitten by a snake, you like try and get a doctor from like even from a different place.
Why? What's the problem? What's the issue with getting a doctor from far away?
It's out of the tomb probably.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you can like tear apart a chicken for him, and you can like shear or I don't know, harvest like some vegetables or something, and feed him.
And chicken soup, right? Chicken soup. You can cut the vegetables. You can kill the chicken. Do whatever you need to prepare the right for this person. And what else?
And you don't need to take maser.
Right, the vegetables you're putting in the chicken soup to heal him, you don't need to take off maser. So what's the implication here? Divrei, let's finish it. Sorry, Divrei Rebbe, yeah, Rebbe Lesser and Shimon Omer.
William Fowl actually answered that he can't eat anything until he takes maser.
Right, so the question is, you can do all these other isurim, but do you have to take off maser or not? That seems to be a machlokes. Okay.
So let's say that this is
what's this?
What we were talking about before was referring to Elazar Rebbe Shimon and not Rebbe.
Right, meaning what we were saying before, Rabba's opinion that it's better to violate Shabbos Derabbanan to get out of Truma and Maser Derabbanan. Maybe he goes like not like Rebbe, who says Ein Tzarich La'aser. Rebbe doesn't really care about taking off Truma and Maser so much. Rabba doesn't hold like him. Rabba does care a lot. He's willing to violate Shabbos Derabbanan in order to take off Truma and Maser. So he must hold like Rabbi Elazar Rebbe Shimon, right? Keep going.
So even if you say that Rebbe was saying like Rebbe,
Right, Rebbe seems to not care about not be worried about taking off Maser. So you could somehow say like Rebbe, that in that scenario, you don't need to worry about Maser, you don't need to take off Maser, and still hold like Rabba that you even violate Shabbos rather than eat Maser. How so? So maybe you can maybe you can limit what Rebbe said to Maser Yerek, Derabbanan. Meaning, vegetables, taking off maser from vegetables is only midirabbanan. And you might think that some dirabbanans, taking off maser from vegetables, that dirabbanan Rebbe doesn't care about at all. But theoretically, maser on dagan, let's say on wheat, that sort of case, even if it's in a pot, even if it's an atzishinu nakuv, in that sort of case, Rebbe would agree. Rebbe would say, no, that sort of thing you definitely need to take off maser, right? So that's the distinction. We're sort of imposing it, right? It doesn't sound from this like it's Yerek or not or anything else. We're saying, no, it must be that was a Rebbe only doesn't care because it's a case of Yerek. It's a vegetable. It's a vegetable with an issue of maser. It's only Derabbanan. That he's not worried about. In our case, though, there's wheat that's being, that has the maser situation. And wheat, despite also, it's also Derabbanan. It's in a potted plant. It's in a pot, right? You have your one stalk of wheat growing out of a pot, which is sort of a funny image. But even though it's derabanan, for some reason we're more worried about wheat when it's in a pot, derabanan, than vegetables when they're also derabanan. Why are we more worried about about Dagon than Yerek? Dina, what's the distinction? What does Rashi tell us? The Rashi Ad Kan.
Dagon is Doraita.
So Dagon is usually Doraita, but not in our case, not if it's in a pot. Right? So what's the difference? So Rashi
we read to the wrong Atzitz Shunakum, so
oh, no. I apologize. This is the same problem as yesterday. I apologize for that. Yeah. I'll try to be better about checking all the quotes. So yeah, so Rashi here says, Delo michlif betevel deoraisa. Vegetables aren't confused with deoraisas, whereas Dagon, aval Dagon deoraisa hu, and even if it's batzit she'enu nakub, you still are ma'aser, de michlif bidoraisa. So the issue Rashi, the way Rashi puts it, it's about whether you can confuse this derabanan with a deoraisa. So Yerek, it's always derabanan. You're never going to confuse that with maser deoraisa, because it's always derabanan. Vegetables never have an issue deoraisa. Whereas wheat, you might confuse wheat in a flower pot with wheat in the ground. And since wheat in a flower pot is derabanan, but wheat in the ground is deoraisa, that you could really get confused. That can make a real problem. So therefore we say, be machmir, avoid at all costs eating truma derabanan if it's the sort of truma derabanan that can get confused with truma deoraisa, such as a dagon in an atzitz she'eino nakuv. So that's how we come out at the end of our Gemara. It's a little bit of fancy footwork here. But we come out with the idea that that we're more worried about some derabanans than others. The ones that can be confused with deoraisas we're more worried about. At the end of the day, the whole issue here isn't really about the fundamental relationship between eating non-kosher food and violating Shabbos. It's about a derabanan non-kosher food and a derabanan of Shabbos, or different types of derabanans, right? So at the end of the day, this, you could say, is not the most, it's not the most fundamental sugya. It looks very interesting. It's like, oh, how do we think about the relationship between eating non-kosher and violating Shabbos when you have this, you have no choice. When it's hakal, you want to do the smallest avera and you have no choice. It's actually a lot less exciting than it looks at first glance. I mean, not, you know, it's all Torah is exciting, but it's much more technical. It's much more worry about these specific, what you'd confuse with what, rather than about the principle of the matter. Luckily, though, our Rishonim have interest in discussing the deeper principle. So thank you, Dina, as well for reading. We're going to jump now. We'll hopefully get back to the other things too, but we'll jump now to source 14. The Rush actually raises this fundamental principle, right? Not just the technicalities of, you know, what are we more worried that someone will get confused about or not, but more fundamentally, we have this idea of hakal akal. You do the smallest aveir possible. So far, we've talked about eating different things, right? If you eat this isser, that isser, what's the bigger onesh? What's more chamur? The Rush is going to say, well, what about a deoraisa non-kosher food and the deoraisa violation of Shabbos? Which one is more severe? Which do we do? So let's look source 14 here in the Rush. We'll skip the first two lines where he just summarizes the sugya, and then they say shalu es haravid. Right? They ask the ravid the following question: Chol sheyesh bo sakana im lo yochal basar. He needs to eat meat. Im yesh lefanav nevela ve'ein shachut im lo chenishchat b'Shabbos. What do you do? You have one animal; it's alive. And he needs to eat meat. Medically, he needs to eat meat right now, and it's Shabbos. So what do you do? Do you, cut it up and eat the meat as is, or you have an avela too, or whatever it is. You have non-kosher meat, and you have a kosher animal that's not shechted. Right? So what do you do? Ki yesh omrim, mutav sheyavar hu, alav de nevela. Better to violate the law of nevela, an animal that wasn't shechted properly, that's an avela. Mishayavru acherim al iser skila. Better that this person who's sick, he's the sick person, he's the one who should do the avera. He should eat an avela, it's non-kosher, rather than have someone else who's healthy enough to shecht an animal go out and shecht the animal and do the whole thing, right? Whose job is it? It's the sick person who should take the fall, so to speak, for his own treatment, rather than make other people have to do the avera. That was the thought that some people had, that some people raised to the Ravid. The Ravid is going to disagree with this. Veheshiv, divriyesh omer michuvanim heim. Well, there's some logic there. Aval yesh lomar ki iser Shabbos kfar nitan lidchos be'avaru v'bishul v'mechamin lochamin. Inami She'efsher shelo yekatan echa b'sofa olam. He said, well, that would be true. That would be a reasonable distinction, meaning you all things equal. It's better for the chole to violate Shabbos or whatever other violations if, as opposed to someone else. But there's a countervailing concern. The countervailing concern is that basically Shabbos is nitan lidachos. Shabbos can be pushed off. How can Shabbos be pushed off? Well, in cases, let's say, of bris, there's a mila, and they have a sick baby, right? You do, or whatever other scenario, you have someone who's sick, you can use fire, you can cook, you can warm up water, you can do all of these different things for someone's health. And that's sort of built in as Shabbos nitan lidachos. Shabbos can be violated for these things. And you never know, maybe there's some baby somewhere. Maybe there's some baby who had a bris who needs to be treated on Shabbos. So it's almost like it's mutter to violate Shabbos anyway. It's sort of, there's always going to be violations of Shabbos that are allowed for health reasons. So here, even though this person doesn't need to violate Shabbos, right? They could violate kosher instead of Shabbos. They could eat a nevela instead of doing shechita. Still, since Shabbos is already sort of matir, we already allowed Shabbos, we apply that here as well. So that's what the Ravid says. That's the first logical argument to prefer violating Shabbos over violating nevela. The logic here, we're going to see, this is not exactly the same as the Hutra logic, but it's pretty close. It's a bit more specific than that. It's saying, not saying that Shabbos sort of by its nature is Hutra, it's saying there's always going to be a scenario where Shabbos is violated. Because there's always sick people out there, and they're going to be violating Shabbos. So like almost like Shabbos is weaker, or sort of takes a step back in a sense, compared to nevela. It's not like, it's not every day that someone eats a nevela because there's a heter. Right? But it is every day, or every Shabbos, I should say. Every Shabbos, someone is violating Shabbos for health reasons. So Shabbos is less severe for that reason. That was the first point in that direction. Obviously, though, if the person needs to eat right away, you feed them right away. A nevela is a lot faster. You eat, you know, you have the meat ready as opposed to shechting and skinning and cooking. Right, so if it's time sensitive, eat whatever you have, says the Ravid. But ideally, you eat. You should shech the animal and violate Shabbos rather than eat the nevela in the normal case. So that's the Ravid's logic. Now the Maharam Meir Rutenberg, Rabbeinu Meir, has another thought. Rabbeinu Meir heishiv b'tshuva al zeh. Behevi dimyon may ochel nefesh biyom tov. The shochtem biyom tov de ika asei velos asei be'isra malacha. Umachal nevela de ein ba'el alav, o lomar linachri linchor ofos to lake el isid rabbanan de ein shechita la ofman haTorah, el a kevan de haTorah hitira lanu ochal nefesh biyom tov, havel didan kol ochal nefesh biyom tov kmo b'chol. Here's a parallel from a case of yom tov, right? Yom tov we say ochal nefesh is mutter. You can cook on yantif. Why can you cook on yantif? Why shouldn't you have a non-Jew cook on yantif? Or there's some other way of working around, right, of doing a less severe of error. The answer is no, we allow, across the board, we allow cooking on yantif. Now, there's different ways, conceptually, of thinking about that, but he thinks that this is similar to what we have here. Just like we allow cooking on yantif, it basically means Yom Tov takes a step aside. So, too, Shabbos takes a step aside. We allow all cases of violating Shabbos for bikuach nefesh. This sounds more like the idea of Hutra, right, sort of moving in that direction. And he says, v'hachinami kevan sheitira Torah bikuach nefesh, wow, a strong formulation. Once we allow pikuach nefesh on Shabbos, any violation of Shabbos you do for pikuach nefesh purposes, it's as if you did it on chol. It's nothing. It's zero. As opposed to eating nevela or eating non-kosher food where we have this idea of hakal akal. It's not nothing to eat a nevela if you're sick. You're still eating a nevela. We want to minimize that as much as possible. Right? So that's what we would call dechuya. Right? You're sort of, you have an isser. You have pikuach nefesh, and the pikuach nefesh overrides it, but it's still pushing back. You still want to minimize the aver you're doing. Whereas Shabbos, it's not dechuya, it's hutra, right? Shabbos, pikuach nefesh, there's no Shabbos. Shabbos disappears, right? You just totally do whatever you need to do. So the Maharam Meir Rutenberg seems to say that as well. Now he has another logical point. We'll see. We're not going to read this inside, but the source 17, the Merome Sadeh, interprets the next line in the Rush as follows. If you have, he says, Ushchuta hamachal mutter, aval hanevela hamachal atzmo aser. The Arye reviala adkan. This is from the Maharam Meir Rutenberg as well. That there's a difference between violating Shabbos and violating kosher. Not because of Hutra Dechuya, that may also be true, but for a different reason. This is what we call timtum halev. I don't know if anyone's heard of that phrase. There's an idea that if you eat non-kosher food, it's mitamtem es halev. It sort of poisons your heart, right? It's spiritual poison. Now, that's only true about foods, right? The fact that you're ingesting the food physically, that's bringing some sort of spiritual poison into your body. Shabbos, I mean, you obviously shouldn't violate Shabbos, but if there's a heter, there's no additional poison, spiritual poison, so to speak, with violating Shabbos. It's just Aryeh D'Ravi Aleh, right? It's usur. There's a lion saying, roar, don't violate Shabbos, right? But once you get around the lion, once you have pikuach nefesh, the animal that you shechted is totally fine. It doesn't have any negative spiritual consequences, whereas the nevela does. So that's another reason, says the Maharam, to favor eating the shchuta, that which was shechted on Shabbos, rather than the nevela. And now the Rush throws in another reason. A technical reason that if you say to the person, okay, here's the pork, here's the non-shechted animal, whatever it is, or here's something, animal I shechted, okay, I shechted on Shabbos, the person's more likely to reject the animal that's treif and say, I can't eat pork. Okay, I'm dying. Fine, I need to eat something. I know it's mutter, but I just can't bring myself to eat the pork. So because of that consideration, we should give them that which was shechted on Shabbos, where people have less of a visceral reaction, right? Most you can say, eating nevela, eating chazer, that, how can I ever do that? Whereas saying, this is a piece of meat that was shechted. Okay, it was shechted on Shabbos, right? People have less of a visceral reaction. We're less worried practically. So the reasons that are here, just to quickly review, are a general idea of Shabbos was already matir. There already are people in the world who are sick and are violating Shabbos, so it's not so bad to violate Shabbos another time, number one. Number two, an idea of hutra. Shabbos basically doesn't resist against pikuach nefesh, whereas eating non-kosher is dechuya. That does resist against pikuach nefesh. A third reason that of timtum alev, eating non-kosher food poisons your soul, whereas eating food that had an avera in the process of creating it, like violating Shabbos to shecht it, doesn't poison your soul. And then the final reason, a practical reason, that people are more likely to reject tray food than they are to reject food that was shechted on Shabbos. All very interesting. We'll just quickly, not even survey. Survey is too strong a term. There's a whole question about Shabbos. Is Shabbos hutra d'chuya? What we just saw from the Maharami Rittenberg, quoted in the Rush, is a very strong source saying that Shabbos is hutra. There's no resistance of Shabbos to pikuach nefesh. Shabbos disappears. And that's not true about non-kosher. The Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos uses the language of d'chuya hi Shabbos etzel sakanas nefashos, that Shabbos is d'chuya, literally pushed aside. There's a whole literature as to whether the Rambam actually holds its d'chuya, that Shabbos really resists pikuach nefesh, despite losing, but pushes back a little bit, or whether the Rambam uses the word d'chuya, but doesn't mean d'chuya, he just means it's overridden, and it's overridden in a hutra sort of way. A whole literature on that, we're not going to get into that now. The position that most clearly says hutra is the Rashbats in the Shut Tashbet, source 16. The Gemara discusses hutra d'chuya primarily in the context of tumah. You have everyone's tameh. Do you bring the carbon pesach? Do you do other things in the mikdash? Is that hutra or dechuya? The Gemara discusses that in a few places. The Tashbet says that that's only about tumah. By Shabbos, everyone agrees that it's hutra, and one of his reasons is he doesn't spell this out fully, but he mentions that it's sort of built in. Shabbos is hutra miklala, and we see this most clearly in the medrash in the medrash halacha that says that. This is really a cool medrash. It says, there's a lot of things that were bedibur echad nemru. What do we know? Bedibur echad nemru, most famous? Shamar v'zachar, I saw a couple people said and mouthed it, right? And that's quoted in that same medrash. That's less relevant for us. There's a different thing that are bedibur echad, which is mechaleleha mos yumas, and b'yom ha-shabbos shnei kvasim. Those who violate the Shabbos get put to death, number one. And number two, every day you bring your carbon tamid, and on Shabbos you bring a carbon musaf. How do you bring the carbon musaf? That involves shechting an animal, that involves violating Shabbos. Well, it's built in. It's built in to the Isser of Shabbos, Mechal Amos Yumas. It was said at the same time as of Yom HaShabbos Shnei Chvasim. So the violation of Shabbos being prohibited and having a punishment is coexistent, is sort of on the same page as the fact that we violate every Shabbos by bringing a carbon. Why? Because it's not really a violation. Where it's permitted to violate Shabbos, it's hutra totally. Shabbos disappears from the picture, is not relevant at all. So that, and this is just one piece of a much longer tshuva of the Tashbetz, that position is, this is the classic source for saying that Shabbos is hutra. So again, it's a whole machlokes, but this is one of the contexts. And again, to some degree, this shows a real distinction between Shabbos and not kosher, right? That, as the Maharam Rutenberg pointed out in the Rush, that not kosher, we do everything we can to minimize the Avera. Shabbos, we don't. We'll see, hopefully tomorrow, we'll see some sources about how we, in some ways, we sort of make a big deal out of it. We sort of violate it in the most high-profile ways possible, because it's the right thing to do, and there's no real resistance. Whereas there is resistance from the non-kosher, and again, several different reasons that one might give to that, as we saw in the Rush. Just very, very quickly, and we don't, because we're out of time, basically. There's three different principles that we've seen in these dapim that come up in terms of minimizing isurim. One is hakal hakal, eating the most minimally usur thing. Another one is what we saw with the ubra about eating the rotev, right? Number one, tasting it, that may be even less. That's not even minimizing. That's not even eating it at all. But eating rotev, eating the sauce, the pork gravy instead of the pork itself, that minimizes the isur because that's tam ki'ikar. Rather than, you're not eating the isur itself. You're eating something with flavor of an isur, which is on a lower level. That you can see that as sort of like a kalakal, or you can maybe somewhat distinct. And then there's a third category of pachos mikashir, which we mentioned in a previous year, eating less than the full amount, which is still usur, and actually usur midoraisa, but is usur on a lower level. It's only a lav. So all of those, you can sort of see those as grouped together, and wherever you say to do one, you should also do the other, generally. Source number 8, the Meiri, seems to group them all together, as put them all under one roof, whereas others distinguish between them. The Or Sameach actually says that this whole idea of eating pachos mikashir, we don't actually apply that to sick people. And the Gemara in Krisos that seems to imply that we do pachos mikashir, that's not a case of where you're eating abnormally, where you eat like, you know, one shot glass, you drink one shot glass every 10 minutes or have one morsel of food every 10 minutes. That's talking about a case where the person's eating at a normal pace, but the food itself has less isser. That's sort of inseparable, but it has less isser. So that would be different for that reason. But according to the Or Sameach, we don't usually do pachos mikashir. We eat normally. Now, what you eat normally, you should eat, you know, things that are less usser. But there's no source for saying that sick people in general should eat in an unusual way of pachos mikashir. Fine. And maybe the last thing we'll do, which is probably the most fundamental. So we'll leave with this principle, which is, what's the basis for this idea of hakal hakal? What level does it work at? How does it really work? So the Kiryas Sefer has a really cool idea, an interesting mechudish line. He says, "V'nira d'hadi amrinan." Source number 9: Ma'achilin hakal hakal tchila lo havi elami d'rabanan. This whole idea of hakal hakal is only a din d'rabanan. D'midor raisa ein lecha davar chamur she'omi b'tnei pikuach nefesh elav odazargi la'shichus damim. We saw this Gemara, right? Pikuachnet, if your life is in danger, you overwrought, you do whatever you need to do, you do whatever you surim, except for the big three. And it doesn't say, and except for if you could eat, hakal hakal, but you choose to eat the more chamur thing, then that also over. No, that's not true. That does not override pikuach nefesh. It's just not the case. Midaraisa. Midarabanan, the rabbis say, okay, if you have a choice, you need to eat something. You have a choice between two different things. Eat the less severe thing. Why? You could give a whole bunch of reasons, but presumably it's not a fundamental isser. It's just, maybe you don't want to accustom yourself to eating major isurim, or maybe there's some worry about timtum alev, again, poisoning the soul idea. Whatever exactly the logic is, it's only midrabanan. It's a second order worry. It's not the real worry. Contrast that to the Bir Halacha, the Mishnah Berurah, source number 10, who says, based on the Binyan Sion, but he says, B'kol achila ve'achila, afim hutar lo lechol pam achas, yoser mishir. Let's say, he's talking about pachos mikashir. So we might distinguish between the two. But to the extent that we bridge between less than a shir and hakal hakal, this may be relevant. That he says, whenever we allow you to eat less than a shir, only meaning, let's say, right, according to the poskim who hold, you have to do pachos mikashir. And it's a scenario where you can make it through Yom Kippur with only having 1 ounce of water every 10 minutes. So what does he say? Pam achas yoser. Sorry, mutlo lecho pam achas yoser mishir mikol makom. Al achila hashnia im haya dailo be pachos mishir v'hu yochal kashir chayev kares. If at a certain point, you know, maybe earlier you needed to drink more, whatever it is, right now you can suffice with less than a shear. If you then consume more than a shear, you consume a full shear, you have your, you know, 3.3 ounces of water within a several minute period. Instead of spreading it out, chayv kares. Wow. Right? You get kares. It's like you totally weren't sick and totally violated, you know, just ate on Yom Kippur, you know, with impunity. So this Mishnah Brura, again, we might distinguish between hakal akal and chatzi shir or pachos mikashir, right? But assuming that we group them together, this would be a perspective that goes in the opposite direction of the Kiryas Sefer, right? A way that an approach that says, and certainly the Kiryas Sefer is not the only view. Some people hold that hakal akal itself is deoraisa. You can take that to the extreme and say that hakal akal and pachos mikashir, all these things are not just. It's not like, oh, you know, it's better to eat the less chamur thing. No, maybe eating the more chamur thing or eating a full shear, maybe at some level that's really usher doraisa. If you're not minimizing your avera as much as possible, you're just doing the avera fully, right? If you really, and this would presumably assume that eating pikuach nefesh and eating is totally dechuya, right? It's or that's not the best way of putting it, but like it's very much dechuya, right? There's a real clash, and the pushback is so much that if you don't eat the most kal thing, or if you don't eat less than a shear, if you do a bit more than what's absolutely necessary, then it's actually usur. It actually is usur and even an isur karis. This, I don't think this Mishnah Brura is the standard view, and I think it's also on a policy level, it's very difficult to implement, right? If you told this to people who were eating on Yom Kippur, you know, have less than a shear. If you don't need more than a shear and do eat it, if you don't need more than 1 ounce and you take a few ounces of water at a time, you're chayv karis. I think that would be a very bad policy to tell people, because people may end up dying, right? That would seem to increase the risk. Probably not worth it. But at least in terms of lumdus, right? We're just doing lumdus. We're not doing halacha l'maisa. Theoretically, this represents a view that the isser is very much dechuya, right? That it's really pushing back as much as possible. And if you do more than what you need, the original isser actually returns, right? It's not that there's some second order thing saying it's totally mutter midaraisa, but we want you to, you know, if you can. Midrabanan, it's better to eat the lower Isser. No, the original Isser is still there, you know, waiting to pounce, as it were, and that's why you need to do the absolute minimum, otherwise it's really not mutter. So those are two different perspectives on, and obviously there's things in the middle. This is just to get a general overview, two different perspectives on how Hakal Akal works. Just quickly mention that, fine. Yeah, the Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin that we do me'at me'at less than a shear against what we saw in the Or Sameach. So that in terms of Psak, there seems to be a bit of a difference that a lot of the Rishonim and the Sifrei Psak seem to say that you do less than a shear, although the Or Sameach and other Achronim seem to say you don't, which is sort of an unusual sort of setup where the Achronim go against what comes before largely. But that seems to be the way it comes out. In any event, this is at least an introduction to some of the issues, some of the sugyas of Hakal Akal.